I can tell you that scouting is very close to my heart and very important to me. I was a scout myself and went all the way through being in the United States Army. And so I appreciate so much the things that you're learning these days. And tonight I hope to share with you some things that are confirming things that you have already been learning. And of course, as we are discussing tonight about the Citizenship in the Nation merit badge, which in reading through the qualifications for that, for you to earn that, is quite significant. And some things that I think are very well worth learning. Now, just to see whether you're awake, looks like you are, I'm going to ask just a couple of simple questions, and those that can answer have a little bit of a gift for me. Okay? Something worth having, I think. All right, now here's your first question. The first person to get their hand up with the answer, with the right answer, will get the gift. What is our national motto? Okay? No, that's the state of New Hampshire, close. Our national motto. No, that's good, but that's not it. Keep trying, okay? There you go. What is it? Who said it? Say it out loud. That's it. Okay. There you go. You got. So come up here, and I've got a little gift for you. Here's the gift. A copy of the Constitution and the Declaration of the United States of America. Okay. And what is our national anthem? Okay. I think you had your hand up first. That's correct. That's good. Okay. What is our national bird? Okay. That's it. Right. Very good. And just as a little bit of a history lesson for you, so to speak, what was the bird actually that was proposed to be our national bird? Okay? A turkey. That's correct. Hey, this is a sharp group. I don't have a gift for you. That was just the first three. I said just additionally to ask that question. But that was good. You're right on. Okay? Well, I want to start off by first of all asking you to stand with me in respect to reading some scriptures here from the Bible. And part of the reason we do that is because actually the foundation of our country and our founding fathers were very fluent in the Bible. They made the statement they would have no other king but King Jesus. Now that was both a statement of their faith in Christ as Savior, somewhat religiously, but it was also a statement of what kind of government that America would have, that America would not have a divine right king, but have a constitutional republic. And as Benjamin Franklin said to a woman outside of the Constitutional Convention, she said, "Dr. Franklin, what have you given us?" And he said, "A republic, if you can keep it." Proverbs 14:34 says, "Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people." Psalm 33:12, "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord." Psalm 33:23, "The steps of a good man are ordered of the Lord." And Judges 17:6, "Every man did that which was right in his own eyes." You can be seated. Thank you. That verse, Judges 17:6, kind of describes one of the reasons why we have a printed Bible, why we have a constitution that we can get and to read, and why we have certain documents that we can look at and read to see what they mean rather than just going by our own feelings. Now, tonight, I have chosen to come dressed like this because I want to challenge you as scouts and commend you, but also to remind you of the original intent of our founding fathers of this country, of which I am a direct descendant. You can say I have it in my DNA to do these things, and I believe that they did. Now, this is a parchment replica of the Declaration of American Independence. Yes. That is very true. John Hancock has the big signature there. John Hancock was a great man, and of course they took pen to paper, a turkey feather or something like that, an eagle feather, and they signed that. Also, one of the things, of course, that they gave out to the winners there was the Declaration of Independence and also the Constitution of the United States, which incidentally, no country in the history of the world has ever had a constitution as long as we have had a constitution, which I would suggest to you because of some of our founding documents like this, that this is one of the reasons why America is one of the freest countries in the world and one of the most prosperous in the history of the world. One of our founding fathers, who is also a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, in his commentaries on the Constitution in 1833, Joseph Story, said, "Republics are created by the virtue, public spirit, and intelligence of the citizens. They fall when the wise are banished from the public houses, because they dare to be honest, and the profligate are rewarded because they flatter the people in order to betray them." So part of what you're learning in scouting is part of what's involved in the merit badge concerning citizenship in the nation is the issues of virtue and public spirit and intelligence. Those are important things. And of course, we know that the Boy Scouts of America is one of the nation's largest and most prominent values-based youth development organizations. Values are important. The values we have are important. We're talking about values here tonight. The Boy Scouts of America, as you know, provides a program for young people that builds character, trains them in responsibilities of participating citizenship, and develops personal fitness. Now, I hope and pray for all of you that you will grow up to be men who consider their responsibilities both to family, to community, and of course citizenship. It's kind of interesting. The first part of the Constitution of the United States, the first three words of that preamble, what's called the preamble, is what? Who knows? Back here? Very good. We the people. And who are we the people? We are the people. That's right. We are the people. We need to remember that. So we know that Boy Scouts of America is building future leaders. I'm looking tonight at some of the future leaders of our country. So I know that's a big responsibility, and we're being blessed by having people work with you, your counselors and your scoutmasters and so forth that are helping you to understand, first of all, which I've always appreciated, even from my days of being a scout, the scout's oath. On my honor, I will do my best to do my duty to who? To God and my country, to obey the scout law, right? To help others at all times, to keep myself physically strong, mentally awake, and morally straight. These are very excellent values, and I would suggest to you that you will find them in the Bible. Those are biblical values. Those are values that our founding fathers were very adamant about trying to cultivate in the citizenry of our republic. And of course, the scout law. A scout is what? Trustworthy, right? Loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. And I gotta tell you, that's a long list, isn't it? And only by the help of God, so help me God, can we fulfill that. But it's a good list. Those are good virtues. Remember we said that the Boy Scouts of America is a value-based organization. Those are worthwhile values. Now, many people would ridicule. If we went out on the street sometimes, and maybe some of your classmates at school or whatever might laugh at you and ridicule you for stating the Scouts' of scout law like that, saying, oh, well, who cares about that? That's not important. But let me tell you something. It is important. It's very important. And it's not easy to come by, and it takes some work to achieve those things. And, of course, even the idea of the scout motto, which is be prepared, right? Be prepared. A lot of people are a day late and a dollar short about a lot of things. Being prepared is important. And one of the bywords for America is being prepared. We have been, as a nation, prepared for many different things, and as a result of that, we've been able to help other countries of the world, which right now, isn't it interesting what's going on in Japan, that our Navy is over there and our Air Force, and we're trying to help the Japanese in the cataclysm that they're going through. And the Scout slogan, right, which is, do a good turn daily. I might add to that for you, do at least a good turn daily, and maybe even more. Because there are an awful lot of people out there that don't even do one good turn a day. We might be expected, in a sense, to do more than that to make up for it, okay? You're going to fill in, so to speak, where others are not. And, of course, that outdoor code, which being an outdoorsman is a hunter and fishing and different things, and just going hiking, I appreciate that. But as an American, I'll do my best to be clean in my outdoor manner, to be careful with fire, to be considerate in the outdoors, and to be conservation-minded. That's right. You're learning these things, and I hope that not only will you be able to repeat them, because, by the way, I have met certain birds that can be trained like a great parrot. They can repeat a lot of things, but I'm not sure that they really understood what they were repeating. So I hope and pray that you will pay close attention as you study to not just learning and being able to repeat these things, but actually implementing them in your life. And I believe that's very important. So tonight we're looking at what it really means. What does citizenship in a nation mean? And what does it mean to be a good citizen? We went out on the street and polled different people going by. I'm sure we would get lots of different opinions on that. But it's kind of interesting that you're called the Daniel Webster chapter of the Boy Scouts. But Daniel Webster had an ancestor before him named Noah Webster. And Noah Webster actually gave us, when we have a dictionary, it's called Webster's Dictionary, came from Noah Webster. And he wrote in a book called On the Education of Youth in America. Hello, who's the youth in America? The other youth in America. Very good. This is a good group, JP. They're awake in here. And they haven't even had a snack yet, have they?
No.
Oh, wonderful. See? Well, this is what Noah Webster said. Every child in America should be acquainted with his own country. He should read books that furnish him with the ideas that will be useful to him in life and practice. As soon as he opens his lips, he should rehearse the history of his own country. Many people today in America have no concept of what America is about. They do not know our history, and that's very sad, because if you don't know where you've come from, it's pretty hard to know where you're going. I'm sure you've heard that axiom before, and it's certainly very true. So when you have the first requirement, which was to explain what citizenship in the nation means and what it takes to be a good citizen of this country, discuss the rights. And before you get off on the part of discussing the rights, most people want to discuss the rights. Just the same as most people want to know how much they're going to be paid for what they're going to do before they do it. But you see, really, the question should be asked, what is expected of me? What are my responsibilities? What do I have to do to get this pay? So not only do we want to discuss what our rights are, but we also want to discuss the definition that citizenship, by definition, is somebody born into this country, that it's not just discussing rights, but also the duties and obligations of a responsible and active American citizen. And I want to tell you, as an active, responsible American citizen, a couple of weeks ago, on Tuesday, I went to the polls and I voted. I have not missed voting since I became of voting age. Some people say your vote doesn't count, doesn't mean anything. I don't believe that. I believe it does mean something. I do believe it's important. And it's also something that many people in different countries of the world would desire to have that freedom, to be able to vote for people who are in elected office. I do chaplaincy up at the State House in Concord, and I can tell you that I know many people that are up there that I can say I voted for them. They're people that I believed in, that had the values that I believe in, and I voted for them, and I guess other people did too, and I was never ashamed or afraid to say vote for this person and don't vote for that person, because we have a responsibility. And we have to look at our responsibilities, and responsibility doesn't have to be a dirty word, as some people think that it is. It actually can be a great blessing. So you know that being a good citizen means treating others the way that you would want to be treated, which in my day we call that the golden rule, which actually comes from the Bible. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, where the perversion of that, and you may have heard it from some of your friends, do to the other person before they do it to you. That is not the golden rule, and that is not really good citizenship. And of course, obeying the laws that are rightfully made for us to dwell under, which incidentally, the supreme law of the land of the United States of America is the Constitution of the United States. And of course, we have a constitution for our state, and I don't know how many of you have actually seen that, but the Constitution of the state of New Hampshire, which we were one of the first states to have a constitution that was actually ratified in 1784, which was 3 years before the ratification of the United States Constitution. So citizens' duties are to vote in elections, pay taxes, serve on a jury, register for the draft, and there are a variety of things that are mentioned in your handbook. And of course, now we get to those citizens' rights, which most people want to know about that. That you have a right to vote. You have a right to a fair trial. Freedom of speech. Freedom of religion. Freedom of assembly. Right to national security. Right to keep and bear arms. Privilege of travel. Carry legal firearms. Eligible in work in all areas. And of course, that's a mixture there for you of certain articles of our Constitution, certain of the Bill of Rights, and certain other aspects of our foundational documents. When I say foundational documents, I'm talking about a number of documents all the way from the Mayflower Compact of November 11, 1620. How many of you have ever been down to Plymouth, Massachusetts and seen Mayflower too? Let me tell you, those people who came across on the Mayflower had to spend their time on their knees because below decks is not much room. That was one of our first foundational documents, all the way leading up to the Declaration, the Articles of Confederation, Declaration of American Independence, of course, before that, and then our Constitution. Patrick Henry, who was one of our great patriots during the War for American Independence from Virginia, said, "The battle, sir, is not to the strong alone, it's to the vigilant, the active, and the brave." And our second president, and who knows who our second president was? Okay? Somebody who hasn't answered one yet? Which Adams? Which Adams? Very good. John Adams. You were both right. See? Two of you partnered up and you got the right answer here. John Adams. Because there were other Adams. There was one other Adams who was the president. And of course there was Samuel Adams, who was a governor of Massachusetts and one of the leaders of our War for American Independence. But John Adams said children should be educated and instructed in the principles of freedom. See, say again? If you look at the states, that's right, and look at the colonies, they were called presidents actually before we had a national president. That's true. And we'll talk about that. I'll give you an opportunity at the end to answer some or pose some questions. But think about that. What I have just read to you that came from your own scout manual, that long list of citizens' rights, those are things that we are educated in, as John Adams said, in the principles of freedom. Freedom is a good thing. Okay, now you know your second requirement is required for you to do two of the following. Visit a place that's listed as a National Historic Landmark. And by the way, we have lots of them right here in New England. I mean, we can go to lots of different ones. You can go down to Lexington and Concord, for example. They're listed in the National Register of Historic Places. You can tour your state capitol building. Who knows where our state capitol is in New Hampshire? Somebody that hasn't answered one before. Alex. Correct. Concord is where our state capitol is. What color is the dome on the top of the state capitol?
Gold.
Correct. What's on top of it? Somebody over here? Anybody? What's on top of that gold dome? An eagle. Very good. This is a good group. Somebody's been teaching these people. I like it. Tour a federal facility. Okay, a federal facility could be a federal building, of which we have some, or it could be a military base, I guess. Any of those kind of things. Choose a national monument that interests you, using books, brochures, and the internet, with your parents' permission, of course. That's what it says in the intent book. Okay, what about a third requirement? Do the following. Watch the national evening news 5 days in a row. Well, that's something, isn't it? Or read the front page of a major daily newspaper 5 days in a row. What national issues did you learn about? And obviously, national issues. There's so much going on right now with budget things. Say again? The recession, about what's going on in the recession, budget issues, health care. There's plenty out there for us to look at and understand, and it's, some of these things are pretty complex, aren't they? Then your fourth requirement, discuss each of the following documents with your counsel. Tell your counsel how you feel. Life in the United States might be different without each one. And of course, the first one, which I held up for you before, is the Declaration of American Independence. How would life be different? And I can tell you there are a few things that are in the Declaration that are absolutely essential for us to understand of how different life would be. And one of those phrases in the second paragraph is that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Many people miss the point that, first of all, what rights that we have are not privileges. I hope you will understand there's a difference between a privilege and a right. And in this particular case, if we went out on the street and said, okay, where do our rights come from? Most people out there are going to make the mistake because they're not learning what you're learning. They're not studying as you're studying. They're going to say they come from government. This is not true. Not according to our declaration. According to our declaration, those rights come from, capital C, our Creator. And we have been inalienable, they're inalienable rights that we've been endowed with. It means we've been given them as rights from our Creator, and they're inalienable, which would basically say you can't sell them and you can't give them away. Now, those three things that we mentioned in here that say life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Is there anybody in here that does not want to have life, does not want to have liberty, and pursue happiness? This is probably common to all people. But it says that to secure these rights, they've been given to us by God, the rights were given by God, but to secure them is why we founded the government. And this is important to understand. Otherwise, we start to think that our rights are not rights, they're privileges, and they're granted to us by government. Just the same as when we send somebody up to Concord, we're sending them up to represent us at government, not to be our rulers, but to be our servants, to be our representatives, to represent the interests of the communities that they have been elected to represent. This is very important because we are a representative government, a constitutional republic that's built on biblical truth and on the foundational documents, and of course, not on just the whim of man. And let's put it this way. Have you ever awakened someday and you had a bad hair day? We've all had that. Well, it's a good thing that on a bad hair day that you're not under the rule of a divine right king named King George III, because if he wakes up with a bad hair day, you might get a haircut from the neck up. You know what I mean? So we have a constitution And we have branches of government, which we'll talk about in a minute. And rightfully, as we go on to the preamble to the Constitution, that preamble has just a few things in it, six things to be exact, of what government's supposed to take care of. Now, granted, we live in a time here in 2011 where it seems that government is taking care of a lot of things that the preamble doesn't seem to cover, or they stretch that. But I do encourage you to study the preamble to the Constitution of the United States, remembering your responsibility along with your rights as being part of we the people, and look at the six things that are delineated there as part of our Constitution, as part of your course in studying for the merit badge, of course. And remember that this, when we were talking about the Declaration, that the Declaration was the final declaration of freedom from the rule of Great Britain, that we became a separate nation, an independent nation. So when we call it the Declaration of American Independence, it was also, in a sense, a separation from the previous government we were under and starting our own. And of course, without the Declaration, as you well know, we wouldn't be the United States of America. Okay, so in the Constitution, that preamble is very important. Then you have, in the body of the Constitution, the first 10 amendments are called what? What are the first 10 amendments called to the Constitution of the United States? The Bill of Rights. Very good. We didn't call them the Bill of Privileges, did we? We called them the Bill of Rights. And there's a reason for that. And I don't think that a lot of people quite understand it today. Hopefully you're understanding it better. They're called the Bill of Rights because they're not, if some people think they're there because it's to protect the government from the people. No. It's to protect the people from the government overstepping its bounds. Let's just say, if we go out here on Route 1, there's a line down the middle of the road. Now, if you want to meet the local police officer, cross the line and be on the wrong side of the road. And you will meet the local officer. You might meet a state trooper. And he's going to say, you have crossed the line. You're not supposed to be driving south on Route 1 on the left side of the road. See? And it's the same thing why we have a Bill of Rights. In a sense, you might call a Bill of Rights the handcuff that the government is in to say, okay, those six things in the preamble, then we go into the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment and all the things that are in there. And by the way, we read those things as citizen rights. But also, for example, like the Second Amendment. Who knows what the Second Amendment talks about? What's the Second Amendment about? I'll give you a hint. Bang, bang. Basically, about guns. The freedom. That's right. The right and the freedom to have and to bear arms. To have and to bear them. Not just to have them on the mantelpiece, but to use them in a rightful way or a lawful way. These are important issues. And of course, as we go down through the Bill of Rights, which I hope that you will particularly pay attention to, the Fourth and Fifth Amendments. The whole issue of due process is so important. You see, if we don't have due process, then we don't have the opportunity to expect that we can go to a court of law and be treated fairly and have justice. Due process. For example, if you do go on the wrong side of the road out there and the police officer gives you a ticket, because of due process, you would be able to actually question the ticket. You would be able to go before a judge. You could even ask for a jury trial. And of course, jury trials, and one of the responsibilities of being a citizen, as we saw in what your handbook says about the citizenship of the nation, is that you would be available to be on a jury. Well, what is a jury supposed to do? A jury is supposed to weigh things out, okay, what facts and evidence have been presented, and make a decision. Is this person guilty or not? So these are part of the due process that we have in America, and lots of countries in the world don't have that. The government official says, you did it, you did it. Some places you don't even get a trial. You just get thrown in jail, and you stay in jail until you have enough money to get out of jail or whatever. But in America, we have due process. And that's so important. And of course, Fifth Amendment, which means that you have some security through privacy, through your personal papers, your personal belongings, and so forth and so on. And these things, if you went to certain foreign countries and told them that you have in America a Bill of Rights in your Constitution, that you have certain rights to protect you when government starts to get off the wrong foot or go beyond the basis of the Constitution, things are enumerated. And by the way, does anyone know what the Tenth Amendment is? In the Bill of Rights, we have 10 amendments. What's the Tenth Amendment?
Isn't that the thing you want to take something from
there? No. We're going to call it the Enumerated Powers. Enumerated Powers. The Tenth Amendment, some people call it the States' Rights Bill. Enumerated Powers. And it's very important to understand, because it's like saying, okay, you know, within a family, what is the power that a husband has? What is the power that a wife has? What are the powers that the children have? We come to church, what are the powers the pastor has, or the elders, or the deacons? Or we go into town, what powers do the selectmen have? These things are delineated. They are explained so that people understand. Wait a minute. Somebody walks up to me on the street and says to me, you know, give me your wallet. I say, no, I'm not going to give you my wallet. You have no authority to take my wallet away from me. You have no power to do that, although if somebody's bigger than me. And that's never been a problem for me, really. Although I did meet Bill Russell one time, and I met Wilt Chamberlain, and then I realized why people look funny at me, because I had to look at them like that, too. But the whole idea of enumerated powers, and I hope that what you're getting from this, I'm enthusiastic about these things, because in the history of the world, no people have ever had such a definition of government and so many branches of government so that we have the protections that we need. And of course, there are other amendments besides those first 10. It's just the first 10 are called the Bill of Rights. Now, the issue also, which we need to look at, is that we have different branches of government. Okay? And we're going to talk about that. I want you to be thinking about it, because I'm going to ask you a trick question there in a little bit, talking about the branches of government. Now, one of your other requirements, let me read this quote, another one from Patrick Henry. The Constitution is not an instrument for the government to restrain the people. It's an instrument for the people to restrain the government. I know that's hard for a lot of people to accept, but here's a founding father that said that. Now, in your fifth requirement, list the six functions of government as noted in the preamble. And remember, I mentioned to you before how important that preamble is, because it says to us what government is really, in general, supposed to be doing. Okay? Number one, form a more perfect union. And please make note, there are lots of people today that hate America. I can understand that there are countries of the world that may hate America. What I don't understand and I don't appreciate is how many people who are in America that hate America. I say, what, have you got a death wish? Why do you hate our country? It's not because our country's perfect. There is no perfect country, any more than any of us are perfect. We know that according to your word in the church that we can say that. That it's a fallen world. There is the fallen nature of man. So there is no perfect country. There's no perfect government. And so our founding fathers, when they came together, they didn't say, we're going to make a perfect government. They knew they couldn't. They said, we're going to have a more perfect union. In other words, a better government than they had lived under before, under the British rule. So a more perfect union. And the second thing, establish justice. And here's a point that I would like to bring out to you that you can certainly chew on tonight. How can we have peace if we don't have justice? You have to believe that when you sit down with your parents, when you sit down with the judge, when you sit down with the government people, that you're going to get justice. You're going to get a fair hearing. Okay? So establish justice is very important. Third, ensure domestic tranquility. We want peace at home. And so part of what government is supposed to do sometimes is referee between groups so we can have peace in our country. Fourth, provide for the common defense. Now, we're a very big country, not just in population of 300 and something million, but in borders. We are a very large country. To guard our borders and protect us from invasion, and America's been uniquely blessed, I believe, by the Lord to have been protected all these many years. We've had very few assaults on our country. I mean, of course, we had more or less the Revolutionary War was a civil war of a sort. Then the War of 1812, we did get attacked then. And of course, some others, like the Quasi-French War, more, of course, Pearl Harbor. There's a classic example of that in 9/11 and so forth and so on. But we, compared to most countries of the world, have been much more protected, and because we have a strong military. And that military is to ensure that we have a common defense. Number five, promote the general welfare. Now, I believe that most people do not understand what the Founding Fathers' original intent. Say that with me. The Founding Fathers' original intent. That's important. What did they mean by promote the general welfare? It did not mean that they would go, and tonight I think I'm going to promote the general welfare. I'm going to go pick all of your pockets and take everything out of your pocket, and I'm going to go find somebody out on the street that I can give it to. Is that okay with you? Why not? I'm promoting the general welfare. I'm going to help those people on the street. Don't you want to help?
We need it.
Okay, we need it. Good point. But see, the thing is, I have no authority to take it away from you to give it to somebody else. And our Founding Fathers believed in helping people. So their idea of promoting the general welfare was more, I think, what the Scout Manual says, contribute and promote happiness. We want people to be happy. We want them to be healthy. And then number six, which should be particularly important and part of the reason why I'm here tonight and glad to come down here and be with you, is secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Hello, posterity. And by the way, somebody walked up to me one time after giving a presentation like this and says, I don't think you ought to use that word, posterity. You know, doesn't that mean my fanny? Hello? I said posterity, not posterior. You sit on your posterity. But your posterity is your children, your grandchildren, and we have to be thinking about that. And scouting is about that. The reason why your scout counselors and leaders give up of their free time to come down here is because they're concerned with teaching you their posterity. Our children are posterity. That's you and me. And I can't help but to be thankful. It's probably easier for me today than it was for some of my ancestors that came over on the Mayflower. It's probably easier for me today than one of my ancestors that fought in the Battle of Lexington, April 19, 1775, on the Village Green in Lexington. So I have a lot to be thankful for as their posterity, right? And of course, that we make sure that we stay free and keep our rights. And that is a challenge, because there's always somebody who wants to take away our freedom, and always somebody who doesn't want us to have our rights. They'd rather have privileges. Because if you got a privilege, if they're the ones that gave you the privilege, they can take it back. There you go. You got it. George Washington. Who remembers him? Yeah, you better remember him. He's one of the greatest men that ever lived. And he's been looking over my shoulder for years. I spoke at the Harvard Club about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and there's a huge portrait behind me of George Washington, about 20 feet tall. And I kept looking back and was looking at it. I thought, boy, I better be on my best behavior, and I better say the right things. And I spoke in the State House in Montpelier, Vermont. George Washington. Go up to New Hampshire, State House, George Washington. Everywhere I go, George Washington's watching me. He's watching me. He said, the foundation of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality.
That's Piscataway. The propitious smiles of heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right which heaven itself has ordained. Now, let me give you a little translation of that. I know that that's 18th century language. We cannot expect the blessings of God upon us if we as a nation are going to disregard those values that scouting is about. If we disregard the values that citizenship in the nation as a merit badge talk about that you're learning, we are not going to have that blessing that the Lord wants for us. We would become like so many other countries of the world. And not to say anything against other countries of the world, but just simply to tell you that I have traveled to others, and I can tell you I am not leaving America anytime soon to live in any other country. Now, some people may disagree with that. That's their privilege. But I've seen enough to say better to stay here. And if we've got problems in America, it'll be young men like you and young people like you, young men and women, who will change those things. And I believe they will. Then in your sixth requirement, it says choose a speech of national historical importance. And there are many to choose. One of them that popped into my head when I was reading those requirements that you go through was actually in 1630 by John Winthrop on the deck of the sailing ship Arabella. And it was called the City on a Hill speech, which many, many politicians and presidents have recited over the years without saying this was John Winthrop's speech. But the one that was in your manual, or is in your manual, was authored by Abraham Lincoln, who was our what? Number of presidents?
14.
No.
15.
Keep going.
17.
No, before that. What comes before 15?
14.
What comes after 15?
16.
There you go. 16. There you go. I wasn't trying to confuse you, but he was our 15. And he said this. 87 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty, and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. When he said that, 87 years ago, he was not only talking about the war for American independence, but he was also talking way back to when the Mayflower arrived. And those are some of the most important, touching words, and I remember as a boy in scouting, looking at that speech and so forth, that has always touched me. And particularly, and I want you to read the speech, I would hope you would, that at the end of that speech he said, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. Remember that it could perish from the earth. And what Abraham Lincoln was saying in that challenge, we the people, that prologue and that preamble to the Constitution, the responsibility we have, and what's this government for? See, some people would say in certain countries of the world, for example, if you live in England, you are a subject of the crown. But in America, the government is subject to you in a sense, belongs to you. The government is ours. We don't belong to the government. That's a basic difference, but maybe you don't quite understand that right now. And I'm planting that as a seed, as I know has been planted in you. But what Abraham Lincoln was saying there, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Now that's a lot of responsibility. And of course, we know the importance of that speech was at Gettysburg in 1863, which was a tremendously bloody battle. I've been on the plains there at the battlefield of Gettysburg. How many others have ever been to Gettysburg? Just a couple. Quite a place, and what happened there was very severe in what we call the war between the states, which was a civil war, if any war can be called civil. So remember that. What does that mean? 87 years ago, our fathers brought forth in this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty, and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Remember that that created equal is in our declaration. And that was something totally unique in all the world because other countries didn't look at it that way. They looked at it as well, there are kings, there are queens, there are princes, there are dukes, there are noblemen of all sorts, but America has had no kings, no queens, no noblemen, all created equal or equally. Now your seventh requirement talks about the three branches of our federal government. And I have a trick question here for you. Okay? Very good. Those are the three branches. I want to suggest to you that there's actually a fourth branch. What would the fourth branch be? We the people. Now, I know this isn't hard to understand, and because most people say, well, we have three branches, but actually, because of our preamble, it says, we the people, we have a fourth branch, and the people need to be involved. They need to be responsible. They not only to reap the benefits of their rights, but also the responsibility, which says if you get a notice in the mail saying, okay, you're on jury duty, you don't say, oh, well, I have to participate, or it's time to go out and vote, or any of those things. The fourth branch of government, I can tell you, but there are legislators in our state who appreciate, and I hear in a lot of hearings up there, giving testimony hearings, many of our legislators want to hear from the fourth branch of government. They want to hear from the people. And of course, especially those that are schooled and understand what they're talking about because they understand the foundation of our country. Thomas Jefferson said this, to be born free is an opportunity. To live free is a tremendous responsibility. To die free is an obligation. Think about that. And John Adams, who you rightfully said was our second president, religion and virtue are the only foundations, not of republicanism and of all free government, but of social felicity under all government and in all combinations of human society. So the things that you're learning, which will qualify you for a citizenship in the nation merit badge, are well worth knowing. And they're certainly the things that will help our country stay healthier and strong. So I am looking at a group of the most important people in America today. I don't know that you think about that when you wake up in the morning, but I can tell you that that is what I believe about you. And I know that that is what your counselors believe about you and your leaders, because they're spending their hard-earned time to be here with you. Now, the eighth requirement says, name your two senators. Who in here can name our senators from the state of New Hampshire? John Lynch is our governor. Gene Shaheen. And who else? Kelly Ayotte. Those are the two. Was Judge Gregg, and he was replaced by Kelly Ayotte. So those two are our senators. Who knows who our two congressmen are? Charlie Bass is District 2, and Frank Gunda, who formerly was the mayor of Manchester, is District 1. So you only have to know four people to get in the little state of New Hampshire. Of course, every state only has a few senators, and we only have two congressmen for our little state. Who knows who the 26th president was? You've been quiet this whole time, but you just hit it with that. You're right. That's good. That's who it was. I'm impressed. Every thinking man, when he thinks, realizes that the teachings of the Bible are so interwoven and intertwined with our whole civic and social life that it would be literally, I do not mean figuratively, but literally impossible for us to figure what that loss would be if these teachings were removed. We would lose almost all standards by which we now judge both public and private morals. This is what was said to us by the people who came before us. And I think we need to pay attention to what they have to say. And I've been mentioning men, male presidents or whatever. All of us have had mothers. And mothers, you know, we talk about founding fathers, but I really like to also mention the founding mothers. Because women participated very much in many ways. And one of the greatest of all was John Adams' wife, Abigail Smith Adams, and also the mother of John Quincy Adams, who was our sixth president. And she urged her son, John Quincy Adams, in a letter she wrote for his first trip away from home, "Great learning and superior abilities, should you ever possess them, will be of little value and small estimation unless virtue, honor, truth, and integrity are added to them." Now, isn't that an interesting quote? Did you know that she was behind the Boy Scouts of America? Well, in a sense, she was, wasn't she? She was teaching her son the very things that you are learning in scouting, the very things that are part of qualifying for that merit badge and citizenship in the nation. She mentioned those same things: virtue, honor, truth, and integrity. Way back then, when her son was leaving home and he was going to Europe, he represented America in the court in Russia, and here is Mama, before he left, said, "Son, I want you to know this. You're going to a faraway place. You're away from your dad. You're away from your mother. But still, the Lord is watching, and we expect you, no matter whether..." And see, today, we put a lot of emphasis on great learning and superior abilities. That's right, we should. We like a winner. We like somebody who knows things. We like people that have great skills and abilities. But not at the expense of virtue, honor, truth, and integrity. Those things are absolutely essential to your character for you to truly be the scout that I believe the Lord and your families and we all want you to be. How many of you know the motto? Anybody in here that's got a relative that's been a Marine, the United States Marine Corps? Okay.
What?
Very good. So you were in Marine ROTC?
Yeah.
Wonderful. That's good. I'm a graduate of ROTC myself. Semper vigilio, fortis paratus et fidelis, always vigilant, always brave, faithful and ready, semper fi, always faithful. Say that again. Yes. Right. Very good. These are all very good things, though. There are people out there of your own generation, and maybe some of your friends, that may laugh at these things. Please do not be discouraged when people laugh about these things. You be those things, and one day those people will appreciate you, though they may laugh. And I close with this before we open for some questions. I'll take that question in a few minutes. Okay, go ahead.
Actually,
good. Very good. And I close with this before we open to some questions. George Washington said this: "I consider it an indispensable duty to close this last solemn act of my official life by commending the interests of our dear country to the protection of Almighty God and those who have the superintendence of them into His holy keeping." And he said that in his farewell address when he left being the President of the United States. And I can tell you, when he gave up his commission as General of the Army, Francis Tavern, all of the soldiers that were there, and there were many officers, other generals and colonels and whatever else, they wept because he had been such a fine man as a leader. And then, of course, as a president, people wept when he was leaving office and he made that statement because he was such a fine man. And I can tell you what, if he was standing here in front of you right now, he would commend you to continue your studies, not only just so you can get a merit badge and the citizenship of the nation, but so that you understand what those things are really about and implement them, use them in your daily life. So I appreciate so much your attention, the opportunity to share these things with you tonight, and I want to open up to questions. Go ahead. Well, the Tenth Amendment about being the enumerated powers, why this is important is because, for example, one of our first flags, sewn by Betsy Ross, who was an upholsterer, by the way, which George Washington had asked her to make a flag, that flag had on it what? There you go. Why 13 stars? 13 colonies. The 13 original colonies, which incidentally, if you go up to Concord to our state capital and you come on the main street entrance to the Capitol building, look above the door and you'll see a crest up there, a shield, that actually says the Republic of the State of New Hampshire. So these 13 colonies, these 13 republics came together to form the Union. And so the whole idea, and this is being looked at right now across the country, of has the federal government, has the national government sort of stood in the way of what the states want to do. And of course, New Hampshire, for those that understand how New Hampshire is, the way that we are as a state, live free or die, we have some ideas about how things should be. And of course, we can do that. I'm going to read the Tenth Amendment to you. It says, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, of course, when it says the United States, it means to our national government, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. Now, that's a pretty simple phrase, and Lord knows there are lots of people discussing it these days and batting it around and having their different interpretations. But I do believe that you will find this to be one of the most important things that our country is dealing with now. In our state house, and I have been in hearings recently, where we're discussing this as to say, for example, can the state of New Hampshire, as the state of New Hampshire, do we have the authority constitutionally to say, no, we don't want to participate in that federal program or this federal program? So basically that's why it's so important. And our founding fathers, and this is really the point of government. Everyone needs to be able to have a petition for the redress of their grievance. Now, in the First Amendment, that's one of the provisions of the First Amendment, that never is an innocent person, for that matter, even a guilty person, ever without the opportunity to have their case heard. And sometimes when things get big, sometimes Washington's a far way off from Hampton Falls, New Hampshire, we need to be able to go to our town council, we need to be able to go to our selectmen of the town, we need to go to the county, we need to be able to go to the state before we can go to the federal government. That's what our founding fathers wanted. So thank you for that question. Other questions tonight? Go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. That's a very good question. Some said because of blood, because of purity, and because of the blue sky above us. Nobody, in my estimation, I've looked at it and studied it from many different perspectives, nobody has really come up with the definitive answer on that. Part of it was, of course, that the Union Jack of the British Empire also had colors like that in it too. And incidentally, while we're talking about flags, one of you in here said about one of our first flags, don't tread on me. Okay, this is called a Culpeper flag or the Gadsden flag. It actually is one of our first naval flags. It was red and white and had the snake on there. Now, does anybody know why it's a rattlesnake? Okay, let's see. Anyone that has an answer to the question? Chris, why is it a rattlesnake? Okay, that's right. No, you're right. He said because of defense. A rattlesnake does not attack. A rattlesnake, when you start hearing the rattle, it's saying, don't tread on me. I'm over here. I'm not going to bother you, but don't step on me. or I'll bite you, so to speak. So it's a defensive action, and that's what we have to remember about our country fought a defensive action fighting against the British Empire. And incidentally, one of our other first flags was called the Pine Tree Flag, an appeal to heaven, or the Liberty Tree Flag, an appeal to God. And that, of course, which if you want to know what the origin of that is, you look at the last part of the Declaration of American Independence, and there are a couple of phrases there that tell us about the appeal that America was making to the rest of the world to look at our intentions, why we were doing what we were doing. Okay? Yes. Become quite popular, actually. A lot of the Tea Party events across the country, you'll see lots of them. I speak at quite a few of those. And a lot of people are having those flags. I spoke for the last 3 years at Faneuil Hall in Boston in celebration and remembrance of the original Boston Tea Party, which was December 16, 1773. And lots of people coming out with those flags there. It's kind of interesting. I guess my point is I'm certainly encouraged that you Boy Scouts are learning these things, and I'm very encouraged that other people, adults, are learning, and probably the things that you're learning, just like for this merit guys, you'll be able to teach a lot of the adults that have not actually known of these things. So that's a good thing. And I want to read just those two phrases from the end of the Declaration. I don't know how much more time we have, but we therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in general Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United States are and of a right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of a right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Any other questions? If not, I'll thank you very kindly for having me here tonight. Thank you, JP, for inviting me.